Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements? I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
I love making this podcast for you guys, but man, I have my days. You probably know the feeling. Work, even the best kind of work, the kind that's engaging and interesting and fulfilling, can grind on you. And if you're balancing a couple of gigs or more, as a lot of us are, it's even worse. Sometimes all it is a bad run. Work gets tough for a bit, it gets really busy, and you look forward to Friday, or to your next vacation, or you just take a day for yourself, and you come back ready to go. Sometimes, though, that's not all it is. You get so fed up, or overwhelmed, or anxious, that even a job you might not hate becomes a weight around your neck, and you burn out. And then, never mind a good job, you don't want to do any job. And this is the part where you need to listen, because burnout isn't a colloquialism anymore. It is a syndrome, officially recognized last week by the World Health Organization, and it is more prevalent in this generation than previous ones. Some of you might be listening to this podcast while coasting through a day job right now, because you just don't have the energy to engage anymore. And if that is you, well, the good news is you're not alone. There are millions of people in the same boat. The bad news, though, is that not everyone on that boat makes it safely to shore. Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Hamza Khan is an author, a speaker, and an educator, particularly on the subject of burnout. He has suffered from it himself, he has written a book about it, and he has given a TED Talk. Thanks for joining us, Hamza.
Thank you so much for having me, Jordan.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. I'm luxuriating in the fact that the Raptors are in the finals. Just the whole idea that we're even here in the first place has just put a smile on my face ear to ear.
This man is the opposite of burnt out. But you've done a lot of work on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
So first, I guess, because I think it's something we all throw around but don't actually dive into.
Right.
What is burnout now that there's an official definition for it?
Right. And shout out to the World Health Organization for coming out and reclassifying burnout, because since 1974, when the term was first coined by Dr. Herbert Freudenberger and Dr. Gil North, what's amazing is that they would submit papers on burnout to their community. They would submit them to various journals, and they would get rejection letters. And sometimes they would be rejected on the basis of being pseudoscience. They would be laughed out of rooms in some cases. And so we've sort of languished in this period from 1974 till very recently without a formal definition of burnout. There hasn't been a consensus. And now finally, the World Health Organization has put their foot down and said, burnout is a state of complete physical, mental, and emotional exhaustion and the consequence of chronic stress unmanaged in the workplace.
I didn't realize that the term had been around for so long and being used that way. So how did it originally come to be, and what was it coined to define?
That's a great question. So some of the earliest cases of burnout were found within the human service industry. So we're talking about childcare workers, social workers, nurses, educators, so on and so forth. The first documented case of burnout was related to a nurse named Miss Jones. That was her name. And they were trying to figure out what was happening to Miss Jones. She was a top performer, in some cases an overachiever, but she just became more and more distant from her work, more resentful to the people around her. She completely flamed out. And so to try to describe what was happening to her and then all of the other people that were working with her and in similar industries, they had to explore that there was something about the way that they were working, the way that they were moving through the world that was resulting in this level of chronic stress. And it wasn't just a simple medical ailment that was unrelated at the time.
So kind of a cynic's question then, I guess. The way you just defined it, aren't we all burnt out at some time then?
Yes, we are. And some cynics would go as far as saying that burnout is an excuse for laziness.
And I wasn't going to go that far because I felt burnt out, and I'm sure that we all have. But I guess what I'm asking is, do we have a sense of where the line is between that sort of like, the last couple of weeks have been really rough and I'm feeling burnt out versus, okay, we have a problem here?
Right. And so the World Health Organization's reclassification of this into something that has a direct medical cause is really interesting, because we often saw burnout as a symptom of something deeper. We saw it as symptomatic of stress in the way that a runny nose is symptomatic of a fever.
Right.
But now, in describing burnout as something that is tied directly to chronic workplace stress, we now can speak with it with a level of specificity and use the right language to validate people who are experiencing things like adrenal fatigue, who are experiencing actual medical conditions that lead down the path of burnout.
So what does that look like then? If I'm a manager or even just a coworker in an office, how can I tell the difference between when one of my colleagues or employees is, you know, just, again, having a long week, or is actually like, we need to get them some help?
I'm glad you asked that. Can I give you a two-part answer?
Yeah.
So I want to read off, if you don't mind over here, what the World Health Organization has characterized as burnout. There's three dimensions. The first is feelings of energy depletion or exhaustion. The second is increased mental distance from one's job, or feelings of negativism or cynicism related to one's job. And the last one is reduced professional efficacy. So those are like the three sort of umbrella categories of things that might be going wrong and throwing you off your equilibrium. But the one thing I was excited to share with you, the 12 stages of burnout, which I'm sure you've researched in preparation for this podcast, but for the listeners, I would love to share those 12 stages if you don't mind.
Sure.
So it usually starts the same: the compulsion to prove oneself, which then leads to working harder, then neglecting one's needs, displacing conflict, revising values, denying emerging problems, and you're about halfway into the burnout cycle at this point. Then you withdraw, you experience odd behavioral changes, depersonalization, inner emptiness, and then stages 11 is depression, and stages 12 is burnout syndrome altogether. And so by the time you've reached stage 12, you're in need of dire medical support.
What does distancing yourself look like in the workplace? I'm fascinated, and I always ask this question to guests, is like, we can classify things all we want, but what does it look like on the ground?
That's a great question. So I'll tell you a story reflecting on my time working at a large educational institution here in Toronto, where I experienced my last bout of burnout. This was in 2014. And so I look back at that period of my life, and I remember that while I was in the thick of burnout, I found myself declining every opportunity to socialize. No coffees, no lunches. I would become very terse and hurried in meetings. I would almost antagonize the people around me, including my own immediate teammates. And I just became the worst person to be around, I think. Mm. And I think the way that, you know, my partner describes me, my friends, my colleagues at the time describe me, they said that you were becoming very negative, cynical, closed off, and you were just unpleasant to be around while you were going through it.
Did anybody talk to you?
They tried to, but at that point, I wasn't hearing it. And I think that leads directly into this stage over here, which is denial of emerging problems, mm-hmm. stage number six. At that point, I was just in the mindset of, it's not me, it's you. What are you talking about? The sinister thing about burnout is by the time you're able to self-diagnose that you are going through or have gone through burnout, it's already too late. You've made it further along the burnout cycle than you think you're in.
So why has the WHO made it a syndrome now after 30-some years of not? Is it mm-hmm. on the rise? Do we have stats?
Oh my goodness. The stats are absolutely staggering. And I think that's what inspired me to really go down this line of questioning and research around burnout. Is because when I first tried to understand what had happened to me when I had burned out in spectacular fashion, I found that the stats were just so alarming and overwhelming, and not enough people were talking about
them. Okay, so give them.
For instance, Ipsos came out with a survey that said that 500,000 Canadians don't show up to work every week because of some sort of stress-related challenges. Another one is the World Health Organization has classified in 2014 that stress is the health epidemic of the 21st century. Check this one out. So in China today, 1,600 people approximately are going to die because of overwork, which is mind-boggling when you think about it. It's gotten so bad in some parts of the world.
Today?
1,600 people die every single day. And this was found in Bloomberg, I think, 4 years ago. And it's so bad that they have words for it. So they have in China and I think in Japan, karoshi and goulaosi, respectively, which translate to literally death by overwork. Mm. Wild.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
Do we know anything about what's at the root of this increase in overwork leading to burnout?
Let me go back to this. Have you ever experienced burnout, Jordan?
Well, it's interesting because I would have said yes coming into this conversation. But listening to you put forward a fairly clinical definition of it, mm-hmm. I kind of feel like I've never really gotten that far along the steps. I mean, like I kind of alluded to, everybody has weeks at their job when things get tough and you get mad and it feels crummy coming into work. This is the best job I've ever had. And still every once in a while, you're like, oh man, this is a lot, right? So that's why I'm fascinated by burnout in general. So I would have said 2 days ago, I would have said, yeah, I've been burnt out. And now that I've learned more about what burnout is, I would say probably not.
Mm-hmm. And there are some cases, I think the one case that really inspired me to make this a big part of my life was the case of a gentleman by the name of Eretz Morehart, who was 21 and died because of overwork. He died as a result of a seizure, but that seizure was caused by chronic stress, the coroners found. And he was the same age that I was, feeling very pressured to work in a high-paced, fast environment of banking. I was working in the record industry at the time. And reading his story made me realize that there's one potential ending for this way of overwork, this way of living your life out of balance that has fatal consequences. So you asked the question of like, what are the root causes of burnout mm-hmm. that are happening in the workplace? So I have something from the Canadian Mental Health Association over here. They say that some of the factors are loss, absenteeism, turnover, and healthcare expenditures. But the root cause of that, when you get down to like what's truly causing this, it's performance pressure. That's a sum total of like a fear of job redundancy, variations in the economy, and generally a feeling of not feeling like you're enough.
Mm-hmm.
Not feeling like you're enough. And I think this is a pervasive problem in not just North America, but around the world, where people don't feel like they're progressive enough, efficient enough, perfect enough, satisfied enough, innovative enough. And so you start to act out in ways that are unnatural and then disrupt your equilibrium.
We hear a lot about the current generation, millennials, but also about the generations coming after them, not having like full careers anymore, where you're able to start with one company and progress and move up and, you know, eventually rise to management and you're kind of secure.
Right.
The gig economy is the term that gets thrown around. How does that impact levels of burnout? And is that because none of the stuff that you just mentioned is applicable to people who are moving from one temp job, odd job, Uber driving job to the next?
That's a great question. So actually on my Uber drive over here, I was talking with the driver and he was complaining about the fact that he's behind on a couple of payments and that he can't get enough hours from Uber and he can't get enough hours with Lyft, so on and so forth. And he was describing a very frenetic work environment that he's in, that he's created for himself. Or I shouldn't say that he's created for himself, that he's found himself in rather. And that made me think about two factors that usually lead to burnout. First is the frequency of stress in your life, and secondly is the impact of stress in your life. And so when I was going through it, I had to ask myself the question of how can I reduce the frequency of stressors in my life and how can I increase my resistance to the impact to stress when it does happen. But when you're in the gig economy, both things are true. Like the frequency of stress is all around you. You're in a very reactive work environment. For instance, imagine if you're a courier for Foodora. Your job is literally wait until somebody gives you a demand and then you have no control over the flow of your work. You right. can set certain parameters about geographically where you want to be or in terms of time, how long you want to work. But for the most part, within the time that you are working, you're very much at the beck and call of others. And that sort of reactive workflow can definitely increase both the frequency of stress and the impact of stress on you.
You can't make your own decisions of how to handle it. For instance, I like to get in and handle all my emails between 8 and 9 o'clock.
Precisely.
You can't choose that because you're just waiting.
Exactly. Exactly that.
You wrote a book about all this.
I did.
You called it The Burnout Gamble.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it a gamble?
Well, I'm so happy you asked that. I've been contending with this idea that in order to succeed, and succeed in terms of how you choose to define it as an individual. If we're thinking about people who have careers, people who are overachievers, high performers in corporate environments and organizations, you have to walk around with a certain level of cognitive dissonance. On the one hand, you have to believe that participating in your job and doing really well in your job and putting in the time and working hard is essential to success. But at the same time, you also have to hold this contentious belief that you are enough without the job, that that job doesn't matter. And I think about LeBron James. He had his quote a couple of, I think maybe a year or two ago. He said, I'm not a basketball player. I'm a guy who plays basketball. And that got me thinking mm-hmm. about this idea that you have to create a healthy separation between your professional identity and your personal identity. So I realized when I was going through the thick of burnout that burnout was inevitable in my life, that I was waking up every single day and I was subjecting myself to both a frequency of stress that was increasing in the impact that it had on me, and that to reach the version of success that I had erected for myself, I would have to continue stepping outside of my comfort zone. I would have to gamble with my health and wellness and my productivity, short term and long term. And so, you know, thinking from a gambling perspective, how do I increase the odds that I'd be able to successfully pass through transitions that were stressful? that's what the book was about. The book was very much targeted to fellow overachievers that were trying to transition into a much more sustainable work pattern of high performance versus the diminishing returns that you experience when you go above and beyond unnecessarily.
That kind of stuff is celebrated, though, in a lot of places. The pushing yourself to the limit and, you know, living and working and, you know, sending emails at 10 o'clock at night and answering them at 5 in the morning, that is the mark of someone who is really, really devoted.
Unbelievable. I look at some of my early Instagram posts from, I think, 2014, the top of the year when I burned out, and they're just so cringeworthy. They're
like, you got a lot of hashtags in there?
A lot of hashtag hustle over there. A lot of posts like, the beard never retires. I'll sleep when I'm dead. Yeah. Like all that kind of bullshit. And just, you know, praying to the church of Gary Vee, who's always on my feet, being like, you got to crush it. You got to hustle.
Yeah.
There's 9 to 5 and then there's 5 to whenever. And so I was really bought into that.
Did you have a partner at that time?
I did have a partner, and my partner was revolted by the type of person that I was becoming. And frankly, I look back in that time and I think to myself, wow, that story was only going to end one way, and you're very lucky that it didn't end the way that Aretz Moorhart's stories ended.
So what can somebody tangibly do? I don't necessarily want you to go total self-help guru on me now, but you're somebody who's both been through this and talked to a lot of people who have been through this. And if there's someone listening right now who's recognized themselves getting up to that step 6, 7 on your stages, what's the first thing you would tell them to do?
The first thing I would tell them to do is just take an inventory of what the stressors in your life are. Just that therapeutic process of writing down what's stressing you out and then taking a hard look at your calendar and understanding that it's a reflection of your priorities. And if there's no time in your week to do the things that are going to restore you and help you to de-stress, you're out of whack. I mean, you're set up for failure. I would say the first thing is like take a hard look at where you're spending your time and then have people in your life that you can establish as checks and balances for you, people who you can give permission to call you out when it is that you're appearing to be disconnected, disoriented, stressed out. And the last one that I love so much is, last but not least, is self-diagnostics. Keep a journal. Mm. Keep a journal. Honestly, before you go to sleep, right after you wake up, write down things to get a sense of what's happening in your head.
Now that burnout is an official syndrome, 2 questions on that. First of all, what will change because of that diagnosis? And what should change? Because I don't think the first one is going to match up to the second.
No. And so what will change and what should change? I'm still wrapping my head around this. I don't have a clear answer for this, but my suspicion is that what will change is burnout will be treated with a level of seriousness and specificity that will separate those who are just experiencing moments of stress and transition from people who are actually going through clinical burnout. And I think that we're going to look to things like depleted adrenal glands. We're going to look to things like internal bleeding and sort of the really tangible demonstrations that you're experiencing chronic stress and treat those with urgency and care. And then everyone else, it'll force us to reconfigure what we've been discussing as burnout and throwing around in the workplace as I'm burned out, I'm burning out, and take a hard look at, is this actually burnout or are you just stressed out? Not the same thing.
Right. Maybe it's the cynic in me again, but I feel like you answered what should happen and not
what will happen.
What will happen? Because what I guess I want to know is, does this tangibly change anything right now? As in, now that it is a syndrome, can I, not myself, but somebody with all the symptoms, go to my manager and say, I've been diagnosed with burnout. Can I go to my doctor, get a diagnosis, go to my work and say, we need to step back here?
Right. I don't think you can do that just quite yet. In fact, WHO came out with a clarification because I think that some news outlets ran with the headline and said that burnout is now a medical condition.
Right.
But WHO clarified that it's not a medical condition. It is a result of stress experience in the workplace. And so there's still the root medical condition, which is stress underlying all of that. But what it does do for you, what it will do for you, is it will give you the language and the confidence to go to your employer, to go to your coworkers, to go to HR and have concrete definitions about what it is that's actually happening. You can use the language to speak to your condition with a level of specificity that didn't happen before, I think, in the short term at least.
When you talk to people and it kind of gets to the point where it's clear that they really are burnt out, what kind of language do you give them to talk about their condition with their managers or their doctors? Because I feel like this might fall into the same unfortunate stigma as mental health that mm-hmm. we're trying to wrestle with and figure out how to talk about more openly.
Right. The advice that I've given people that I've written about, that I've talked to, both as a speaker and as an educator and just as a friend, a mentor, colleague, family member, whatever, it's been about stress. Like, use the language of stress. Talk about the types of stressors that you're experiencing. Link them to specific things that are happening in the workplace. Use phrases like, when I walk into the cafeteria, for instance, I feel a little bit nauseous because I'm having a conflict with X coworker that hasn't been resolved. I mean, use specific language to talk about why it is that you're not feeling the way that you want to feel in the workplace. And that's all I can do with my limited pedigree. Again, not a doctor, not a specialist right. by any means, but the language that I have prescribed has been about being clear with what is getting under your skin, what's causing you to clench your fists, what's causing you to clench your jaw, what's causing you to tighten up your shoulders, what's causing you to feel nauseous, to feel clammy, to experience the cold sweats and to not want to get up out of bed and go into work.
Hamza, thanks for this.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the platform to speak about this really important topic.
Hamza Khan is a speaker and educator and author of The Burnout Gamble, a copy of which we have for one of you. Check out our social media today for more. And that was The Big Story. You can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. The aforementioned social media is TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter and at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram. You want to throw us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts or your platform of choice? We would appreciate that. You can find us on any of them. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together, and we were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.